supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Support for Voices in the Family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. You know, families meeting the needs of autistic children, as you can imagine, face numerous challenges. Some have to do with educational issues. Some are rooted in physical challenge. Some communication. But in addition, every parent of an autistic child I have ever spoken to has said their child has changed them, who they are, in fundamental ways. In today's show, we'll talk about the impact of autism on the family, and we'll begin our discussion by finding out about a new theatrical performance in Wilmington. The play's called Lucy, and it tells the story of a mother's journey from her resistance to her child to acceptance, and how she finally, through this process, accepted herself as a woman, and as a woman with her own issues, her own complexities. My guests in this segment of the show are Damian Atkins, David Stradley, and Dr. Robert Nassif. Damian is an actor and playwright who wrote the play Lucy, which opens later this month at the Delaware Theater Company. He joins us by phone. Damian, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
David Stradley is directing the play. He's here in the studio. David, welcome. Thanks for coming out.
Thanks for having us. It's a pleasure.
And Robert Nassif is a psychologist, author, friend of mine. He specializes in families with autistic children and has a grown son with autism. And he is also here in the studio. Rob, welcome back.
Thanks, Dan. Good to be here.
Later on, we're going to talk about the impact of autism on family with two mothers, each of whom has an autistic son, and of course, we want to hear from you. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, 888-477-9499. We're talking about the autism and the family, its impact on the family, and vice versa. Damian, let me start with you.
Sure. Most
people would assume you wrote this play because a friend or a family member has autism, but that's not your story. Where did the impetus come from?
About 10 years ago, I was asked to play a character with autism, kind of at the last minute, and I didn't know where to start, so I just kind of went to the bookstore and was looking through the section, you know, for some, you know, book about autism, and I ran into somebody that I recognized, but whose name I could never remember, and to my dismay, he came over to talk to me, and I was, you know, struggling, trying to remember his name. And he asked me what I was doing, and I told him what I was doing. And he said, "Well, you know that I teach a class of autistic children, don't you?" And I didn't. And he said, "Why don't you come into one of my classes?" So, by this sheer stroke of luck, you know, I ran into him and went to his class. And I was sitting there, interacting with the kids and taking notes about this part I had to play. And something in me said, you know, you're here to write a play, that actually you're here to do something bigger than just play, a part that you will do and be finished within a month. So that kind of started me on an 8-year journey to collect the information I needed and formulate the story for the play. But
what was it like for you when you were in the, was it a play or a TV movie?
It was a TV movie that I was doing, yeah.
What was it like to have autism?
That's a good question. To be honest with you, I don't think I was very good in that TV movie. So, it was difficult. It was isolating, I will say. Even in the sort of off time when, you know, we were sitting around between shots or that sort of thing, I didn't really, you know, for whatever reason, the strange alchemy on a film set, I didn't really mix with the other people, with any other people my age, you know. I was alone a lot. you know, and in the scenes, there was no direct communication. There was indirect or direct nonverbal communication, let's say, but so that I didn't have the kind of satisfaction of a lot of, you know, contact or conversations. I remember this being a very difficult thing to try to inhabit.
Yeah, it's interesting. The first thing you said talked about kind of a severing of communication, and you know, a lot of kids on the spectrum more involved might not even notice it, but those lesser involved do, yeah. And that's very painful. My grandson Sam, who's very high functioning on the spectrum, says that he feels different from the other kids. Tell us about Lucy. Introduce us to her. How old is she? How involved is the autism?
Lucy is, when we meet her, she is 13, or just newly 13 in the play, and she hasn't had a lot of contact with her mother, who kind of gave her up or abandoned her just after birth. But, you know, due to various circumstances, her father wants her to kind of, you know, she's becoming a woman, she's going through puberty. He feels that she really needs a maternal influence, and so, and also her behavior is starting to deteriorate, which she's becoming somewhat less functioning, which I had read or talked to various experts said is not uncommon sometimes when children with autism reach puberty. So he feels that she needs a maternal influence, and so he reunites Lucy with her mom.
Where was she?
She was living with her dad. I don't specify, but I say she's kind of living in a smaller community, whereas her mom lives in a major center that has more access to therapies. And that's part of the reason, actually, he wants her to be with her mom. The mom is more well-off, too, and so he thinks that with her money and with where she lives that she might be able to give therapy to Lucy that he would not be able to give. And he's afraid that if he doesn't do something quickly that her development will be stunted forever.
Come back to the piece of the original question I asked about Lucy and what she's like. How involved is the autism? Because we're going to learn as this show unfolds, autism can mean anything.
Yeah, I wanted her in the play to be, you know, obviously I don't know the entire spectrum of functioning, but that she's not terribly verbal. She's not terribly communicative. She is she's tactile defensive. She doesn't like a lot of loud noises. She has a very particular set of routines that she needs to follow, and she's pretty rigid in those things. So, you know, when we see her having an assessment in the play, the doctor says that he feels like she hasn't been given very many enlightened therapies, that she is not integrating with the world at all and not really communicating with the world. It looks a bit like she doesn't communicate with anybody really other than her father.
All right, well, let me turn to you, Robert, as the expert here. A lot of these symptoms Damien described Lucy had, they are fairly typical for kids on the autism spectrum.
Oh, sure. Absolutely typical. And the interesting thing I found in reading the play and listening to Damien is that the more common situation that comes up is the boys with autism really needing the influence of their fathers as they approach adolescence.
Well, that's the case for all of us, isn't it?
Well, sure. But it's even more intense because with autism, mothers get very involved. Of necessity are much more involved with their sons than they would have otherwise been. Fathers more often at a loss as to how to relate and communicate, and yet very much needed. So just this past weekend, I was in Richmond, Virginia, where 75 dads came out on a snowy night to talk about autism with me and to talk with each other.
I also want to touch on something Damien mentioned about Lucy deteriorating at around age 13. When Sam was first diagnosed, I learned that brains go through radical changes and the kids can either get better or worse. I think it was around 5, around puberty, and again around 18.
Sure. We see this a lot, a reintegration of the brain in adolescence, and often things calm down after that, but it's not necessarily that way.
Damien, I want to come back to you, and we're going to leave Lucy for just a minute. You said the other thing you wanted to explore in this play was the whole issue of motherhood and the mother instinct. And I have to tell you, as a psychologist, you and I could go, you know, we could do a whole show on you and your interest in the mother instinct. But I'll be a good boy and we'll stick with the show here. Tell us about Vivian, the mother in this show. What's her personality like? What's her background?
Vivian is a really difficult woman. She's brilliant. She's an anthropologist. She's very driven, but she is she's hard to get along with. And I think we are meant to wonder whether she is herself on the spectrum somewhere, and that becomes a part of the play. But you know, after she didn't really want to have a child, but she didn't feel like she could say anything. You know, it was just the thing you did. And then after she had Lucy, she had a terrible reaction. She didn't feel like it was the right thing. She didn't know what to do. She felt like she was an imposter in the role of mother, and so she left. And you know, we say in the play she thought she would come back, you know, a day later, 2 days later, but she couldn't get up the courage to come back, and then she just never did come back. She reestablished contact later, but so and we are meant to wonder, I think, whether she just had a really severe case of postpartum depression, or whether she, you know, whether some women aren't meant to be mothers, you know. Whether that is a kind of universal trait or attribute that women have or that mothers have, you know, or whether it is not, you know, or whether it is more complicated than that. But I feel like we don't actually. It is for me, and I feel like it is in the sort of public discourse a kind of constant. The idea of mothers and mothers loving their children above all, and
you bring up so many interesting issues here, and I'm going to turn to Robert with a couple of them. One is, Mom Vivian might have some characteristics of autism there, and what that touches on is the universality of autism. And you know, we talk about the autism spectrum. Now, kids with autism, for example, have difficulty seeing things in context. They don't pick up subtleties in human interactions. But I see that a lot in my office, people not picking up subtleties in human interactions. And they're diagnosed as men.
So sometimes I hear people distinguish what's autism and what's typical male cluelessness.
Right, right. So, I mean, there is a quality of that. I mean, we are all on some spectrum, aren't we?
Sure. I mean, I just think of it as the human spectrum, and it's a matter of degree, and it's a matter of whether where you are on that impacts your ability to function in life, to live independently, to work, to read and write, and all sorts of things.
The other thing that Damien brings up, and I think it's interesting and very important, is the possibility of PTSD in parents of autistic children.
Oh, yes. And in fact, I was a co-author of one of the first articles about this, and there's research going on now about this, particularly the more severely impacted children may have traumatized their parents. And even ongoing, children with these severe behavior problems often attack their mothers. Their mothers wind up in the emergency room. And there's ongoing trauma.
I want to turn to you, David. You know, Damien described Lucy in great detail. How in God's name did you find a 13-year-old actor to do this?
Well, the easy answer is we didn't. when I first read the script and first talking to Damien, it was pretty clear that an actor who is the right age for this part would not be able to handle the emotional complexities of the part and just the physical technical details of the part, getting the physical behavior, getting the voice, getting the various screams and barks and yells. So we looked for actors who were right out of college, right out of undergraduate, people in their early 20s who were short, were petite, who looked young, but who would also have the technical capabilities and the emotional resources to play the part. And I think we really found a terrific actress. Her name is Andrea Green, and she's just been diving into this part, which is a huge challenge for a young actress, but's been doing a spectacular job with it.
I wonder what it's like for her to be able to climb in that mind. Mm-hmm. You know, Robert, I'll bet you could do that after all these years of experience. And, you know, with all these years of your son, Tariq, how old is he now?
He's 31.
Yeah. What's it like in the mind of someone on the spectrum?
You know, you always wonder. I always wonder what he's thinking. I always wonder what he's experiencing. I'm left to, and in his case, he's nonverbal, I'm left to guess as best I can. From adults I know who have autism, I learn more directly how the mind works. And of course, there's this whole debate over what to cure or not that I think comes up in the play. And somebody as impacted as Tariq, of course, I'd be the first one in line for the cure. But other people like Stephen Shore or Temple Grandin, they say, I don't want to be cured. I'm fine the way I am. And they are. So again, there's no simple answer.
Yeah, that's the spectrum thing.
Mileage may vary.
One of the things that comes up in the play is that Vivian rejects the child. And I wonder if there's a quality, and I'll turn to you again, Rob, is the quality of universality in that also. Is there a moment when most parents say, I don't want this anymore?
In an unguarded moment, in the dark night of your heart, people tell me this all the time.
Right.
Once they're comfortable with me and once they're safe. It's not socially acceptable to say. Dads will say it more than moms.
Yeah.
This disability, this condition, severely impacts the bond between a parent and child, and you spend years just trying to repair that and make that whole again. But most people, I think, do that.
We're going to be talking about that more in the second half of our show when we speak with two mothers, both of whom have sons on the autism spectrum. We're going to take a short break. We're going to talk more about this really interesting play that's opening up in Delaware very shortly. I'll supply you with details then. But we're talking about the impact of autism on the family, what it does to the rest of the family. My guests are Damian Atkins, David Stradley, and Robert Nassif. Damian's an actor and playwright. His play, Lucy, will open later this month at the Delaware Theater Company. David Stradley is directing the play. Rob Nassif is a psychologist and author, specializes in families with autistic children. Well, we'd love to hear from you. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. If you have an autistic child in your family, we'd love to hear from you. Tell us about what impact it's had, how you're dealing with it, and how it's changed you. Again, 888-477-9499. I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY-FM.
WHYY is supported by the Cooper Heart Institute, where doctors perform a new life-saving procedure in post-cardiac arrest patients. The process, known as therapeutic hypothermia, lowers the body's temperature to 93 degrees and is instrumental in saving vital brain functions. Part of the Cooper Resuscitation Center, therapeutic hypothermia has been used to provide specialized care to cardiac arrest patients throughout South Jersey. For information on how Cooper is advancing medicine in South Jersey, cooperhealth.org/numbers or 800-8-COOPER.
Delaware Theater Company supports WHYY and presents Lucy by Damian Atkins January 19th through February 6th, when Vivian, a brilliant scientist, is called upon to take care of her estranged 13-year-old autistic daughter. She searches for answers to her daughter's mysteries and is forced to confront her own personality. Lucy challenges conventional wisdom about normalcy, motherhood, evolution, and autism. For tickets, 302-594-1100 or DelawareTheater.org.
Thank you.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about the impact of autism on the family, how having an autistic child can often change who we are and how we experience our lives and the world we live in. My guests are Damian Atkins, David Stradley, and Robert Nassif. Damian's an actor and playwright. He wrote the play Lucy that we've been talking about. David is directing the play, and Rob Nassif is a psychologist and author who specializes in the impact of autism in the family. I want to come back to you, Damian. Vivian struggles because of rejection of Lucy, but then she reconnects with the child. And
yeah.
Is this reconnection about a deep-seated maternal need, or is it about guilt that she can't handle anymore?
That's kind of the journey of the play. I think what she finds is her inner mothering instinct. You know, I think it comes out in odd ways. It manifests itself in a theory and a kind of behavior that, you know, that the other characters in the play find really sort of traumatizing. But I think it does come from the kind of mothering instinct that she didn't know that she had. I think, sure, there's a lot of guilt that she has been living with, you know, for years since she abandoned Lucy, that she is trying to make up for, but that the connection that they eventually make, I think, is genuine.
David, tell us about Vivian, the Vivian you found, the person Vivian becomes in the play.
Damian told me when he wrote the role that he was looking for two things, tremendous intellectual ability and also emotional accessibility. And the actress we found, her name is Kate Eastwood Norris, and she's just a remarkable force of nature who has a powerful intellect. She's really jumped into the scientific part of the character. She has a whole scene where she's delivering this new theory of evolution. But in the times where the play kind of slows down and she tells the story of what she felt when she had this child and didn't have those natural mothering instincts, just tremendously powerful, and you can just see at the bottom of this woman's being what this meant to her and what it means to her now that this child is back in her life. And that degree of emotional rawness and power is really wonderful.
Damian, I want to come back to Lucy. She engages in a lot of monologues, not unusual for someone with autism, and they sound quite true for someone on the spectrum.
Oh, that's good.
I want to know how you got in there. How did you get in there so closely?
Yeah, it was a deliberate choice that I made that the mystery of the play was not going to be what's going on inside Lucy's head. You know, that the play was going to take place inside Lucy's head, because I felt like any other way of doing it would be to condescend to her, you know, to write the play about unlocking the poor little autistic girl. So I just kind of dived, I dove right in. I have to say the first book that I read when I was researching was a book called Nobody Nowhere by Donna Williams, which is, a famous book in autism circles. But Donna Williams is someone with autism who was quite nonverbal and uncommunicative as a child, but eventually was able to communicate and was able to communicate enough that she was able to write a book about her experiences. So I took that as the kind of informational basis for the artistic leap I had to take. But, you know, she talks about things in the book like she felt her eyes were so sensitive that she could see air particles. Things like that, and she talks about the rage that she would have when people wouldn't understand her. Part of what was great about it was that there was a reason. She could talk about the reason behind all of her behaviors. That there's a person in there actually reacting, coping, reaching out, not reaching out. So I took that as a guideline in terms of, you know, creating speeches that we are able to hear because we are inside her head, but that the outside world wouldn't be able to hear because she doesn't yet know how to communicate.
Well, you done good. You done good with these with these monologues. And even Robert's nodding his head yes, and he's got way more expertise than I do. I've got a kind of a trick question here for you, and could jeopardize our whole friendship. So I want you to take David's job as the director, and I want you to find a Vivian, a mother for an autistic child, but the kind of mother that you would like to see having for Lucy. What kind of characteristics would you look for? And the first one that comes to my mind is assertiveness, but what would you look for?
I think you have a couple of them coming on the air in a little while. I really do. The mom I would want for Lucy would just be tuning into her from birth to, like, her little movements and learning her language, her nonverbal language. I'd want a mom that was tuning in and figuring out how to relate and communicate even after the kid withdrew, and who had support, you know, from her partner, and who had good help to read the clues of a baby who is withdrawing because of autism and learn how to be with that child right where they are. Nobody's been with Lucy. And I think that's what the therapist in the play is talking about. She hasn't had the right help, so she's become more withdrawn instead of more connected. Although that's really hard to gauge. But I'd want a mom with a good partner and good professional help who was learning how to connect and relate and communicate.
I want to turn to Damien. Did Vivian have a good partner or no?
She does. I mean, that's part of what is complicated about the play is that, you know, she is matched with a man whose name is Gavin, who is all heart. You know, he doesn't have the resources that Vivian has, but, you know, when Vivian left the child, he took on her care all on his own. And part of what I find interesting about him is that the conflict that he's having is that he's spent 12 years raising her on his own with limited resources, and he's exhausted, and he feels terribly guilty about that, and he feels, and his life has kind of been on hold, so he meets a woman and he wants to get remarried, but he feels terrible about it because he doesn't want to take any energy away from Lucy, but at the same time, he can't help himself, he's completely exhausted, so on some level, he has fallen short of the absurdly high demands that are placed on any parent or set of parents if they have a child with autism. But I think we in the audience understand that it's not unreasonable for him to feel like, A, for him to feel like he has fallen short, but B, the fact that he has fallen short because he's all alone, you know?
I want to talk about him, but I'm curious. Damien mentioned the audience, David, and you know when you conceptualize a play, you're not just looking at the written word. You're also thinking, I assume, in terms of the audience experience.
That's absolutely correct.
So, what's the goal? What are you aiming for here?
The goal is to take them on the ride that Vivian has in re-encountering this child, this 13-year-old, to put her. Have them take the sensory and emotional ride that Vivian takes, but the ultimate goal is by the end of the play to have the audience know in the core of their being that Vivian has come to love and accept this child and to accept herself as a mother and to do that without any strings attached.
How does that happen?
Hopefully it happens by that the audience can recognize and see the various steps that Vivian takes to try to love. It's Vivian's journey to love. You know, first she tries it by, as a scientist, trying to break through and figure out what's behind autism. Then she tries to do it by coming up with this interesting theory that says her child is special and unique. And then ultimately it happens in this very magic and very theatrical moment at the end of the play that I don't want to give away, but is just kind of a nonverbal and totally instinctual sign of love.
David, this is... time in our show where it's time for the shameless plug. So tell
us. I can plug.
Tell us when it's opening and how we can get information about it.
The production runs from January 19th to February 6th. You can get information on Delaware Theatre Company's website, which is www.delawaretheatre.org. We spell theater with an R-E. And you can also call the box office at 302-594-1100.
Yeah, I am very much looking forward to seeing it. Damien, thanks so much for joining us today and for putting this together. It's it looks wonderful, and I've had the joy of reading the screenplay. And it really turns this thing into a very, very poignant and human experience. So thanks to both of you, you Damien and you David.
Thanks for having us on.
Rab, you're gonna hang around because after we take our break, we're gonna talk to two mothers. We've been hearing from Damien Atkins and David Stradley. Damien is an actor and playwright. He wrote the play Lucy that will be opening on the 19th of this month, and David Stradley directed the play and was kind enough to schlep up here to our studios today on Monday. So thank you. If you want to join our conversation, it's 888-477-9499. After our break, we're going to be talking with Sabra Townsend and Juliet Pryor. And Rab Nassif is going to continue to stay with us. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY-FM.
Delaware Theatre Company supports WHYY and presents Lucy by Damien Atkins January 19th through February 6th, when Vivian, a brilliant scientist, is called upon to take care of her estranged 13-year-old autistic daughter. She searches for answers to her daughter's mysteries and is forced to confront her own personality. Lucy challenges conventional wisdom about normalcy, motherhood, evolution, and autism. For tickets, 302-594-1100 or DelawareTheatre.org.
WHYY is supported by the Cooper Bone and Joint Institute, managing severe orthopedic injury and disease. Their joint replacement program has received the Blue Distinction Award for excellence and quality care. Whether due to arthritis or a severe injury, Cooper physicians precisely align your hip, knee, or shoulder replacement. Tough injuries, skilled physicians. Cooper Bone and Joint Institute. Locations in South Jersey and Newtown Square. CooperHealth.org/numbers or 800-8-COOPER.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We are talking about the impact of autism on the family. Our number is 888-477-9499. We're talking about the facts, and we will talk about the facts and what it does and what it means to a family member's daily lives. But we're interested in talking about how it changes family members, individuals, as people, how they're different, how they become different, or maybe more of the same. We're going to be talking with Sabra Townsend. She's the mother of 13-year-old son Branson. Sabra, thanks so much for coming.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And Juliet Pryor is a mother of 10-year-old Colin, who is their oldest child. Welcome.
That's right. Thank you.
And we're going to talk about him being the oldest too, and your decision to have other children. Juliet, let's start with you. Tell us about Colin. Same question I'm going to ask Sabra is, how involved is he?
It's very interesting because I just read Lucy yesterday, and Colin is actually very similar to the character of Lucy. He has very little language. Has the temper tantrum, not so much temper tantrums, but the screaming to communicate and the giggling out of nowhere. He is a beautiful, loving, sweet child. I know he's completely brilliant. He's changed my life completely.
How?
He's made me a better person. He's made me a better, I don't think I would know how to parent as well if it wasn't for him. I'm very grateful for the specialists who have come in who have taught me so many things, but more than anyone, Colin has taught me so much. He's been my greatest teacher.
I want to get into details later, but like I said when I introduced you, you decided to have children after Colin, knowing there was a genetic risk here. How did you come to that decision?
It was sort of made for me. I have to say it wasn't really a decision as much as a happy little accident. So,
happened when you found out you were pregnant? You must have been scared.
I was nervous, definitely nervous. With my seconds, I have three boys altogether. And the second is three, the third is 9 months. So I still don't know yet about my 9-month-old. He seems to be progressing well, but my 3-year-old is definitely a typical child. But it was nerve-wracking, and I would watch every little, you know, scrutinize every little behavior.
Do you still do that?
For the 3-year-old? No.
I'm sorry, for the baby.
For some reason, I've relaxed about it, and I'm just appreciating who he is, and I'm allowing, you know, what he is to be, and he seems like a typical child as well, but, you know, Colin seemed like a typical child. Of course, he was my first, but...
Tell us what kind of therapies Colin's receiving.
We started with a traditional ABA, a little bit of floor time.
That's applied behavior analysis?
Correct. And it didn't really work for us. We found a wonderful program called the Sunrise Program. That's Sun, S-O-N. And that was life-altering for me. It worked very well for Colin. And it changed and influenced a lot of people who came in and worked with us. People made huge changes in their lives, in their career paths, and because of that program, because of Colin. There's an autism drama program going on right now at Theater Horizon because the artistic directors and the education director of Theater Horizon came in and actually worked with me, with Colin, changed their lives. They created a program. Now it's affecting all these other children. So so much good has come out of Colin, you know, and his differences.
So I know there's many, many parents of autistic children who hear about this program and they want to know more about it, how they can get more information, who's eligible, can they get in, so on and so forth.
For the Sunrise program?
Yeah.
That would be, I would look at their website, autismtreatmentcenter.org, or Google Sunrise, S-O-N-R-I-S-E. I liked that because it really took care of the whole family, not just the autistic child, and I think that's such a huge important part, to look at the whole family. You know, whereas our ABA counselor would say, you know, if we were disagreeing about something, my husband and I, he would say, you know, you need to talk to a counselor about that. Whereas Sunrise embraced that and saw that as being so relevant to Colin's well-being, that mom and dad could speak together in a way that was healthy and functional.
Sabra, let's tell us about Brandon. He's got special needs that preceded autism.
He does. I had a very different experience. Brandon was born with a condition called prune belly syndrome, prune like the fruit. And so I joke and say I was dropped into the fire. The autism came a little later. It's a congenital tissue disorder. So... it affects his ability to toilet, being a little graphic, but it was, he had a surgery on his first day of life. He stayed in the NICU for 19 days. So, and he was also my first child and only child, and that's not by accident. but that was very life-altering. For instance, I had no idea. I'm an engineer. My ex-husband is also an engineer. I didn't know what a medical social worker was. And it was a medical social worker who took me by the hand and told me the things I needed to do to get the proper insurance, to make the proper arrangements, to talk about early intervention and these sort of things. And that was way before the autism diagnosis came along.
What was it like being dropped in the fire?
Oh, my goodness. I tell parents that your world gets very small. your world becomes very focused, because someone was telling me that my child may not live. One of the things about Prion-Willi syndrome is that it 50% of the children who are born with it are either stillborn or die within the first month or so. And as you could well imagine, that's not something you plan for. I had a very uneventful pregnancy. And from that day forth, which happened to have been September 11th, that was his birthday, long after.
Yeah.
It was just a pretty fall day. It wasn't anything relevant about that day then, but that it was my child's birthday. And so being in the NICU, being involved in those sort of things, it makes your world very focused. I got to the hospital. I stayed in the hospital. I stayed in the NICU, that sort of thing.
What were the early signs of his autism?
It's interesting. He would line up cans in the kitchen. He would take out from the cupboard and line them up in size order. And the first thing I thought, oh, he's playing. And then I went, you know, that's kind of interesting. And the thing that I remember was a day that you ever pulled a drawer out a little too far. I'd pulled out a silverware drawer, and of course it made a racket. He didn't flinch. And I got his hearing test, and his hearing was fine. And I was like, wait a minute, there's something a little different here. Now, the advantage of having had a child who was born with special needs was that I was in and out of the hospital frequently. So the diagnosis came probably much earlier than it would have had he been physically fine. His diagnosis came at 19 months or something like that. So from that point on, then, you know, here we have autism in addition to a very rare condition.
I've got a question, and it might be too personal. If it is, feel free to not answer and throw something at me. When Brandon was born, you were a two-parent family.
Yes.
And now you're a single mother. Do you think the demands of his condition contributed to your marriage breaking up?
That's an excellent question, and I don't really want to know the answer. And I say that because I don't know. It's a challenge. I would hope that I would hope that there would always be love for my child, and I joke and say that there's no such thing as too much love for a child. So however people are capable of loving him, be they related to him or not related to him, is what I accept.
Dad's still involved with Brandon?
That's a challenging question to answer.
Okay. I get it. There's a lot of talk, Robert, about divorce rate with autistic families, and, you know, as high as 80-90%, I've heard. But what's the reality here?
Sure. the reality is that the stress and the distress for families is much higher than for families with typical kids. However, recent studies, including one from Kennedy Krieger, Dr. Brian Friedman, the principal investigator, released last May, showed that the divorce rate is comparable to the divorce rate in the overall population. As well, a study from Easterseals a few years prior indicates that many families develop resilience and that parents come closer. And again, no empirical evidence that the divorce rate is higher. So the 80% is one of these myths that people hear it and they repeat it, and it's still assumed to be true. But there's the important thing for listeners is that there's no empirical evidence of that. And in fact, the evidence points in the opposite direction, that the divorce rate is comparable.
That's really surprising to me, because there's, you know, an average marriage is difficult these days, and you add on this tremendous stressor on top of it. And I can see where some would come closer together and some would pull apart. I guess the reason I'm thrown off is because I see in my office the families that are pulled apart. I've got a biased sample, and I see, you know, fathers who come in and don't know how to deal with their grief and their impotence, and they feel abandoned by their wives, who are, what they say, over-involved with the child.
I would say that it has helped me redefine family.
Go on.
Because I've created, both of my parents are deceased, and I've created a new family, if you will. I have essentially adopted a mother. I've adopted girlfriends that are aunties and, you know, male friends that are uncles, and a family that then helps me to take care of Brandon. So while there had been a divorce in my immediate family, I've created a support system of folks that I've that helped me greatly in terms of taking care of him.
Julia, when I was talking about marriages, you were chomping at the bit to get in the conversation. So
it is incredibly stressful on a marriage, like children are in general, but a special needs child. I actually think that having more children was really helpful for my marriage. And I think it's harder on men to have a child with autism. I think there's more expectation for men what their father-son relationship is going to be. I think women are more accepting of that and protective. And, you know,
we got this great big left brain thing going on here where we need to repair.
Exactly.
We can't repair it, we're worthless. Right.
Exactly. And I think that for our family, having that typical son was incredibly healing for my husband, you know, to be able to, because then you can do, then it's okay to be like, well, you know, Colin might not want to do this thing, but I can do that with Colin, and I'm okay with doing something a little bit different with Colin, you know, because I have this opportunity to do it with my typical son, I think. I think that's what.
You were a six-year-old.
Three-year-old, 10-year-old, 9-month-old.
Three-year-old's too young. What's your vision of what they're going to be doing for and with Colin?
The brothers.
Yeah. Are they going to be involved in his therapies?
I really hope so. And I'm very much a believer of allowing people to do what they want and not forcing anything on anybody. But I try every day as much as I can to do little bits of getting my second son to understand what's happening with Colin. And he is very perceptive. He actually said it too. Mom, is Colin a little shy? Which I thought was a really beautiful perception of autism. And Shane is my second son, and he's just incredibly perceptive. And I think that as he gets older, he will understand what's going on, and I think he will be really helpful. And I think it's going to make him a better human being.
What do you recommend, Rob, when it comes to siblings? I mean, you were one of the first to even acknowledge that siblings are affected by autism. Should they be more involved, less involved? Should they be protected?
Well, I think what Juliet said is, you know, the best way to handle it. Siblings want to help. They want to understand their brother or sister's condition. They need to be supported in that. They need information at their level, kind of like sex. Talk to them at their level. Juliet's the birth order in her family is particularly challenging because Colin will always be like the baby. If the birth order were reversed and he actually was the baby, that would be easier for the other kids to pitch in and help out. This is going to be
a little confusing,
a little painful for everyone as they surpass him developmentally. But they can learn to understand him, and with the approach that their mom has, I think they will.
Yeah, kids want to help. That's part of our hardwiring. Saber?
I think of the kids who Brandon interacts with since he's an only child, his schoolmates, his playmates in the summertime, summer camp folks, they are just as important in terms of his interaction in the community and his interaction at school. So I've worked with particularly his summer camp staff to make sure that the other kids, or to the extent that I can make sure, the other kids are noticing and accepting of his differences, but also including him in the sort of summer camp activities that a typical child would have.
Sabra, when we first started talking to you, you said how changed you were. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the woman you were 11 years ago.
Oh, my goodness.
And the woman you are now. And not the externals.
Right.
You know, not,
right.
not those facts, but
And
in
you said
heart.
11 in terms of before he was born?
Yeah.
Okay,
because
he's 13. So,
sorry.
That's all right. And so I guess prior to having Brandon, I may have mentioned I was working as an engineer. I was independent. I traveled. I skied. I did stuff that, you know.
What kind of person were you?
I'm fairly outgoing, involved. I've been president of my engineering society.
Comfortable with your life?
Comfortable. And so,
tell us about you now. Are you the same? Are you
oh, my
different?
Goodness. Well, I mean, I'm still fairly outgoing. I have a wacky sense of humor. I certainly can help say that Brandon helps me with that. I've worked with a parent organization. It's called Autism Sharing and Parenting. We've created a group that helps other families who have children on the autism spectrum. I've changed careers. I'm working in public health as a result of...
How about who you are?
I know. I've been avoiding that question. Can you
tell? I know, and we're running out of time, so spit it out.
Well, I certainly am more open and accepting of all folks, all people, all ways that people can be, yeah. And Brandon has helped me with that.
It really does.
Definitely.
It really does open your heart. Unfortunately, we are out of time. I really want to thank all three of you so much for joining us. It's been great. My guests today have been Sabra Townsend and Juliet Pryor. They each have a child with autism. You guys were wonderful and still are. Earlier, we heard from Damian Atkins, whose play Lucy addresses the socio struggles related to autism. Show opens January 22nd at the Delaware Theater Company in Wilmington. He was joined by David Stradley. And Robert Nassif has been with us for the whole hour. He's a psychologist, specializes in families with autistic children. He's the author of Special Children Challenged Parents, The Struggles and Rewards of Raising a Child with a Disability. Next week, we have a day off for the Martin Luther King holiday. When we return on the 24th, the language of pain. How do we talk about our pain? Well, if you want to reach us, we're at WHYY, voices at WHYY.org. Me, I'm Dr. Dan Gottlieb at AOL.com. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Al Banks. Elizabeth Perez-Luna is the executive producer of audio content. Mike and Scott's our executive producer. Jennifer Lynn is our producer. Special thanks to Kevin Collins, our intern. I am Dan Gottlieb. Enjoy your week, my friends.
Tell me more.